Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Real sports guys. It's the People's Radio. It's RSG up in your headphones. Allow me to introduce
the illustrious Queen Anne Hoop. Marcus the Game Changer. The Seventh Jackson. D. Will, the Ill Executive. He's like Suge Knight without the anger management issues. Phil T, the sports PhD. This dude is coming at you from all angles. He's got all the bases covered. There's not a whole lot about sports this brother don't know.
Can you dig it, sucker?
Featuring Ray, Justin Page, Eric Hamilton.
RNG fam is like, woo!
Nah, I blame it on Nintendo.
It's definitely a gin party around here. Definitely a gin party.
Don't bring any Kool-Aid.
You don't get no better than this, baby.
I want winners. You guys act like this. Pick it up a little bit. Okay? Get your chin up. Smile. Smile. Anybody can be beat.
Don't get no more realer.
Yeah, man, I had to bring back the old school intro, man. I'm gonna work on an intro for us, man. Welcome to Hustle and Flows, Marcus the Game Changer. My man Say Cool, we in here representing Real Sports Guys, RSG Renegade Radio. Yeah, man, we got some
throwback
gold out of that. Yeah,
yeah.
It was some great audio in there, man. Just real good copy.
I'm legit laughing while I was listening to it. I was like, oh yeah, I didn't realize you're like pain in the ass for RSG. You're like the voice that gets it all cracking. You think you like me? You're not like me. You a punk. I like
it. Yeah, man. So, man, welcome to Hustle and Flows, another hot edition. We're going to try to keep this one real efficient. You know, get on our Chris Middleton. Give you that 50-40-90 real quick.
Quiet 23. Quiet 23.
Right? Super quiet. Like, did he play? I mean, what was his minutes? Was he out there? Or did he get hurt? The migraine? What's up?
Chris Milton,
man,
come on, he's y'all key, man. That's the second star. That's the D Wade of the Bucks. Don't be.
I don't know if he's the D Wade of the Bucks. I would settle for him being our cool coach, but we need a D Wade. We need a Scotty. We need another dude. I don't know where that's gonna come from though. They got to get creative. They got to get real creative. Or Giannis gonna be wearing a different uniform in 2 years.
Giannis is definitely wearing a uniform. I mean, I don't wish that on any franchise.
Yeah.
He's not coming to the Knicks, so this is not even like a self-serving kind of a thing, but if he's not in Miami, I'd be kind of surprised. If he's not in, I'm not even going to say Miami, but I just feel like Miami's going to have it all lined up for him.
I think Miami or Dallas has the best pool. Like, if I'm Giannis and I can go play with Luka, it's a wrap. If you're Giannis, you're going to score 30 a game playing next to Luka because he's just going to be setting you up. Because that's all Giannis needs. He needs somebody to get him a couple of easy buckets. Like, everything is so hard. Like, when he talked about he sees a wall and he's run through it, he said that because that's what he do when he plays. Like,
yeah, every time.
There's nobody creating anything easy for that dude, man.
I love Luka.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind if, like, this season coming up, he maybe, you know, takes some extra rest, doesn't really go so hard.
KP's
not coming back. Yeah, we got that pick. I need that pick in the lottery. It would be ideal if it was in the lottery. I'm not going to wish anything negative on Luka because I love him. Porzingis is just as unreliable as I knew he would be. So a lot of the Maverick fans in my life, I'm like, hey, enjoy. Enjoy seeing him put up 35 and 15 and then be out for 8 weeks. Enjoy that because that was my
experience.
Like, oh, my God. Yeah. It's like, oh, he tore something? Are we sure? Oh, it's his knee. Oh, I'm sure that'll be fine. He's only 7'3".
Right.
Every time that dude falls down, I used to hold my breath. Every time.
Like, he's going to break, man. Like, he's going to break.
So, yeah, if they get Giannis, that's a problem for the league. That's a huge problem for the league. I actually don't want that to happen now that I'm thinking about it. Cause
yeah,
then
if you got Giannis, Luka, Porzingis,
yeah.
Even if Porzingis is only there 60% of the time, when he is there, I mean, you got 2 7-footers and a 6'8" point guard. There's a lot. And who can – like, you got a – one of the 7-footers can shoot it out to 25 feet. The other one, a freak athletically. Like, how – you could put a lot around that and be fine. Like, you have so many options to just be like, all right, we just going to throw out a small guard, or we're going to put another big guard out there. We're going to put 2 forwards out there. You know what I mean? Like, you can do whatever the hell you want with a lineup like that.
If in a year they haven't really made it, they still lose in the second round or what have you, Morey, our boy, is like, yo, Embiid had a good season. Embiid for Giannis.
No.
Straight up.
Simmons,
no. You say no.
No, I'll talk to you. You call me about Simmons.
Really?
I think Simmons is physically more reliable.
He's like, you want him
Simmons
now?
Is physically, I mean, you're going to have to throw some other stuff in there. But we can't start a deal with Embiid.
Tobias?
Yeah, we can't start a deal with Embiid. Simmons and Tobias. I mean, if we got to trade him, so I'm always assuming that he's about to bounce and we need to get something.
Yeah.
Like, they need to get something. I'll take Simmons and Tobias. Even at that money, Tobias is still, what, 26, 27? You figure you put some shooting around. We already got shooting, you know what I'm saying? So it's basically a very similar team. You've added another score in Tobias. Simmons is Giannis without a couple extra feet of arms, you know what I mean? Like, with a smaller wingspan. I mean, they're basically the same dude. Simmons shoots less than Giannis, but I'd run that back. I'd run that out there real quick. You don't lose a whole lot defensively.
I don't know what Simmons is like
as far as a locker room. I think that's probably
terrible.
The biggest question about Simmons is, can he leave?
No. But, you know, you think about that later. All right, so he's going to be on the 76ers, which is definitely terrible. All right, I don't want to play
this
game anymore.
If they don't trade Simmons for Harden.
Please, come on. That made me so angry. They're going to pursue Harden. Like, no shit. They're going to pursue with what? Who are they? Come on, man. That just make me angry. I cannot imagine them wanting Embiid. And then if you'd want Embiid, there's nothing even close. And I would have to know Embiid is, like, going to come in and be, you know, Shaq and L.A. level motivated. Otherwise, forget it. It's not even worth it. I'd rather just win 50 games every year, lose in the second round with Harden. I'd much rather that than be Simmons.
Houston's problem is that after they get rid of Harden, they don't have a draft pick to like 2030.
Yeah, it's all gone. Yeah, it's all wrapped
up in
rust.
They're going to be terrible.
And, yeah.
So they got to try and get a younger guy in there who can at least keep them afloat, you know, for a couple years. Because Harden is, he's at his prime, he's at his peak, and his value is as high as it's going to be. All right, let's get into this. All right,
yeah,
so we got a couple of things, a couple of topics that we're going to get into. Where do you want to start? We're going to talk some Busta. We're going to talk hip-hop and Trump. we're going to talk 1996. 96 is going to be that year. So we're going to talk about 1996. We're going to set up a little conversation around that. So where do you want to start with this?
Let's start with Extinction Level Event 2. Two!
Let's do that.
Yeah.
Let's do that. So Busta Rhymes drops Extinction Level Event 2. First off, just what were your impressions?
So I was texting you probably a week leading up to it. I don't know. It was probably my most anticipated release for the year. I was up, so Ninth Wonder does these Instagram Live sets, and so he said, like, I'm going to be debuting this thing. So I listened to it in my house with headphones at like 99 volume, right? So I was like blasting this, and Ninth was going crazy. I mean, he was on one that night. And he played probably about 11, 12 joints. And I was literally like, this might be the greatest album I've ever heard in my life. That was my initial impression. Then I listened to it the next day, and I noted that Ninth played about half the tracks on the album. I still think the album's great. It's not as great as that first day. I thought, like, wow, this is going to be an 11 album. This is going to be like an Illmatic. Like, this is going to be incredible. I still think it's incredible, but it has some weak areas that I'm not crazy about. But I to me, it's still, like, for me, immediately the number one slot for 2020 best album. And I got to think about it some more, but the feel I get from listening to it, it's very re-listenable. It's kind of an opus, in my view, as far as production, rapping, flow, the way he puts the songs together, just the vibe of the whole album. It's masterful. And so for me, it's long-awaited, and it lived up to the hype, in my view.
Yeah, I'm with you. I had a very similar experience. The first 12 tracks, I was literally just in it. I was in it. I was like, yo, I can't believe it. Yo, this is crazy. Like, it was crazy. I mean, like, I literally was like, I stopped on the Slow Flow, the ODB track. I stopped at that one because I was like, okay, I got to put this into context. I was like, okay, let me just – I pulled up his catalog and Spotify. I'm like, okay, this got to be his best album. I mean, this is sickening. Like, this is so good. Like, I mean, the energy, he had the trademark Busta energy. His flow was crazy. Strap Yourself Down. I played that in the car with my kids. Now, I got you know, a 12-year-old, a 14-year-old, and a 15-year-old, and we were headed to the gym to do some basketball, do some hooping, and I put that on, and they were like, why is he rapping like that? And I was like, y'all don't even know. This is Busta Rhymes. Y'all finna get educated. But he was
like,
going so hard.
Yep.
I mean, it was something, and their reactions, like, it was something they never heard before. It's just they never heard anybody go that hard on the track. Never.
Yeah.
Never. And just the czar, I mean, just all of it, man. Those first 12 tracks, for me, after you, it took a real steep dive for me. It's still probably going to wind up being the best album of the year off the strength of those first 12 tracks. Because, again, after those first 12 tracks, I was like, yo, this is a classic. Like, this is – Busta figured it out. Like, and the way I was framing it up in my head, because I was thinking about talking about it on this show, as I'm listening to it, I'm like, how can I put this into words, what I'm experiencing right now? And the way I had framed it up in my head was, you know, when Nas dropped his album, it was like Nas was trying to make 2020 music, right? That was Nas's album. Making music in 2020.
Yeah.
Busta Rhymes' album was a Busta album in 2020.
Yeah.
Two different things, right?
Yep.
Like, this is what a Busta Rhymes album sounds like in 2020. Not Busta Rhymes trying to make 2020 music.
Yeah.
But this is like his vibe transformed, evolved, and fast-forwarded into 2020. That's what he had. And he had, I mean, it had a vibe. It had a essence. It had a message. It had lyrics. It was consistent. It was tightly knit. The sound was all connected and very chaotic, but at the same time, thick and it just all flows so well together, man. It's just, it was just like literally, it was crazy. I haven't had an album give me that vibe in a minute, man. And I was in, and then it just took a nosedive, and not in a bad way. Like, it was terrible. It just wasn't what it was. And when you go from that,
go ahead. I'm with you. Because you were like, man, it's the second half. And I was like, man, is the second half so bad? So, you know, I had to put it into a spreadsheet because that's how I understand everything. So, color code, this is what I do to albums. Don't judge me. So, I put them all down. So, green is good. So, the first 12, they're all green. The only one that I had to think about was Out of My Mind, the Belviv DeVoe track. And the only reason I say that is it is a bit too manufactured. Like, it's one of those Busta songs like Pascal Cavassier where I'm like, all right, I get it. I get what you're trying to do. It's fine. But it's like you really were like, okay, here is my club track, and I'm going to do club things in it. And so that one I was kind of like, all right. But the Poison sample is, then the beat is, everything's crazy. And Busta got a co-production for that track. He co-produced a couple of tracks on here where I'm like, wait a minute now.
Yeah, I noticed that.
Yeah, so I was like, okay. All right, I see you, Busta. All right, so we get to you. You is 12. All right, 13 is Oh No. That is, to your point, that was Busta, for whatever reason, trying to make a 2020 track. It had a trap beat on it. I was like, what is this? I don't know why he did this. I have no idea why this is on there. Then Don and the Boss, the Vybz Kartell. I know why he did this because, you know, this is the Jamaican, like, yo, I'm going to do something. But it's not a good song. It's, for whatever reason, it's the lead single of this album, which I had forgotten. Yeah, they released this over the summer. I mean, I didn't know it was part of Extension Level. But, like, this track came out, and I was like, oh, this is not great. And I wish this wasn't on the album. He could have just released this as a single on, like, some compilation reggae album, and that would have been great. Okay. 15 is Best I Can with Rhapsody. I like this one. And so 9th was also providing, like, a lot of background on the album and the history or whatever. So this is a late addition. So some of these, I think, were late additions because, so you know the background, like, he pretty much had this thing done 3 years ago or something, like 2 years ago, and was kind of just sitting on it. And he gave a copy to 9th, and 9th said, like, I just had to sit on this for 2 years. I couldn't share it with anybody. All I could do was just listen to it. And he was like quality control. So he talked about how Busta asked him to add something to it. So there's a couple of tracks on here, like Mariah Carey, I think, was an add-on, but all the first 11, 12 were the ones that I think were on the original. And so I think the back end is where you see a little bit of the, all right, let me add a sprinkle of this, sprinkle of that, and that's where it kind of unfolds. So Best I Can, that I like, Rhapsody, Where I Belong, Mariah. You didn't like that one.
I really didn't like that one. I really didn't like that one. And it had nothing
really
to do
like
with
that one. Why? I'm curious. I think I might know why.
It had nothing to do with the actual music or the rapping. I just didn't like the message. I couldn't get on the vibe with, like, why is the woman apologizing?
Okay.
This is America.
This is exactly my point. So when I'm listening to it, it is funny because I was kind of like, all right, Rhapsody raps, and then Busta raps. So I was like, okay, this is obviously a he said, she said. And then it wasn't until like the second or third time I listened, I was like, oh, wait a minute. This is a, they're both blaming the woman on this.
Yeah.
I was like, this
I just,
is
I, yeah.
weird. That's weird. It's very unique. Yeah.
So for me, it was like, okay, if you're going to have Rhapsody on your album,
yeah.
why are you why are you trading like child support verses?
Yeah.
Like, and that's why when I texted, I was like, he wasted a rap feature. Like, if you're going to have rap on your album, like, don't be trading child support verses, man. Like, and it just didn't align with the rest of the vibe that he had created.
Yeah.
Like, those first 12 tracks, he created a vibe, but he just never went back to that.
Yeah.
That one bugged.
Agreed. Okay. So that one, I liked it, but it was strange to hear rap, especially because Rhapsody is very pro-woman. Like, she's been on a couple of features now with, like, J. Cole and J. Electronica, where she's, in essence, being the strong black woman, like, I was here for you, what's up, like, let's have a real talk, which Busta could do, but for whatever reason, she was like, yeah, you're right, I was crazy, my bad.
Yeah, she was just like a prop. She was just like a prop for him to vent and be like, so like, for me, it was just like, yo, we never give women a pass when they mess with crazy dudes and it doesn't go bad. So I'm not giving you a pass for messing with a crazy woman and it went bad. Pick better spouses.
Yeah.
Pick better people to have kids with.
This is mature hip hop listener. Just come on. It's funny. So I had one of my boys hit me up. I was like, yo, you have to listen to this thing. And he hit me up on like a DM. Like he was like, I don't even want to post this, but he was like, I think I would have liked this in the 90s when I just didn't know enough about life to know how problematic some of this stuff is. And I was like,
exactly.
Oh, man, come on. Just listen to it. All right, so
exactly.
where I belong with Mariah Carey, I'm literally just – I'm going to pretend this track doesn't exist. So we could just
– Please do.
We're not
we're both there.
It. Yeah, all right. So Deep Thought, this one was weird. I guess he did it himself. This seemed to me a little bit like a therapy track, right? So it starts out, I'm like, I'm not kind of sure where this is going. And then it's like, oh, okay, this is him just venting. So he talks about Chris Lighty. He talks about his dad and his spouse maybe. It was kind of weird. But, yeah, so this one I put as a borderline. But then, and this is why I just do it, like the look over your shoulder with Kendrick Lamar, everything about that track to me is incredible. Kendrick verse is dope. Busta comes is dope. The flow is dope. The sample is crazy. I don't even know how they cleared MJ sample. I don't know who they kidnapped to get the Jackson 5 cleared. But the way that thing is chopped up, it's been in my head for over a week. So that one I put as one of the best tracks on the album.
Wow. I wasn't there with that one. So, again, I text you, like, I feel like he wasted a Kendrick feature. He wasted. So, like, for me, like, this, again, it's, like, not necessarily anything wrong with that song. Kendrick raps his butt off. Busta actually out-raps him on the song. I just felt like that beat was so soft. Like, and I don't know what it was, but I was, I just felt like I wanted another energy level, and that was, like six notches below the chart.
Taking you down. The album's about to end, man. He's bringing it in for a landing.
I get it, and I don't hate it, and I don't think it's a bad song. It wasn't what I was expecting, and that threw me off. And the beat is good. I like the beat. I think the beat is really. I just thought it was a mismatch of like artist energy and then beat energy, and I just didn't get the synergy with that one. That one was another one. I was like this one is solid. It's a good song, and it can stay right. Like so, when I create my playlist of this album, when I take the junk out and just put in the joints I like, that one will still stay. Because again, lyrically, it is on point. Like it is sick. Like both of them kill it. And Busta, that's one of his best verses.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've heard people just being like loving it, and I'm like, man, something wrong with me. I don't love this that much. Like it's good.
Something's wrong with you. You're in a bad place, man. It might be the election. Listen to this like 2 weeks from now with President Biden. You're gonna be like, this is the greatest song ever. I love this song.
Right, in a month, when we finally get a final, when they finally
Christmas.
Call it.
When we have a president at Christmas, you'll love it. All
right,
so right. That one we agree. So then, You'll Never Find Another Me. I did not think this one grew on me. I've been listening to this album a lot. Initially, I was kind of like, this maybe is a little manufactured, but this shit slaps. I mean, Mary is, this almost is like a Mary song with the Buster interlude, but it's got the funk and the soul. This is another Buster produced track. It's got an Ain't No Love kind of vibe to it, like a little Kanye-ish. And so I like this one. And again, it's slower. It's definitely more an introspective kind of a thing, but I thought this one was good.
That one was solid. That one was solid. Again, it just wasn't where the other ones were.
All right. And then Freedom, this one, I was like, meh. That's literally my meh. Like, if you have Mary, you don't need this track. Like, you already have the Mary track. This is redundant.
Yep.
Again, and then
Satanic, agreed, 100%.
And then Satanic, that's just him saying that, you know, and again, Busta albums always have this. So I guess I'm used to the end. He's always like, all right, so just to wrap up, good and evil, God and the devil, choose wisely. There's a lot of devils out there. All right, I'm out. And that's what this track was. And it was just done. It's just pure God flow. Like, just Busta, like, let me, you know, break it down. So this one I liked as an outro, too. So on the back end, I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 tracks that I have removed from my playlist out of 11. So that's not a great hit rate. So you are right. The back end of it is quite uneven. So I was like, all right, you know what? You're right, because I'm not even listening to 4 of these songs regularly. Like, I cannot let that Where We Belong. My God, why?
Yeah, no. Like, I get what he was trying to do. They had a moment with the Give It To Me joint that they had back in the day, but, like, nah, we didn't need that again. Nobody wanted that. Nobody was asking for that.
Nope. So overall, I guess a couple of things, like, big picture. Busta is just as a rapper in kind of a league of his own. And, you know, the whole T.I. Busta thing was funny to me because I kind of had it in my head, like, T.I. is, like, a hustler, but, like, Busta is an artist. Like, he's literally an artist. And this album is just him showing his range. So he's got tracks on here that are live anthems. He's got ones on here that is just straight serving you bars, no hook. I'm just going to give you a minute of spitting, and that's it. He's got the silly stuff. He's got the introspective stuff. He's got everything, and it's effortless, and you can tell he's having fun. It's just like seeing Peyton Manning or, like, Tom Brady at, like, their peak powers when they would step up to the line, and they'd be like, all right, what do we got here? Oh, I see what you're in. All right, I'm going to do this, and it's just effortless. It's almost like, oh, I don't care what beat you throw at me, what kind of song I'm trying to do, I can do it, and it's gonna look like I'm not even trying. And this is, you know, 25 years into the game, which is just incredible. So it made me feel like I was in high school again. This had a 90s vibe throughout it, from the Dilla to Rockwaller to, you know, the premiere track, everything about it, high
Swiss
tech.
Track, I mean...
Yeah, switch
track.
I miss high tech.
The MOP track, man. There's just so many just like moments.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. It's just that first half of this album is godly, man. It's just gold. Like he had all 6 of the Infinity Stones right there, and he was just pushing. Yeah, he was getting it done, man.
So I'm happy. This is gonna hold me off for a long time. And the fact that he had this put together 2 years ago and was just sitting on it, I was like, why? I don't understand.
Yeah.
And hopefully he'll come out and explain this. I was like, you could have put this out in 2018, but you know what? I think it's right. I can't think of a better time for me to have to listen to this.
We needed it right now.
And so something else I've been thinking about on this and then I know we got other things to do. But, like, I feel like this is a year for lyricists, right, for actual song creators. Because, and I think we talked about this last time, no one's in the club. You know what I mean? So people who make their bones by making these club anthems, it's kind of like, well, why are you going to drop something now? It's not going to hit the way you want it to. But it's opened up this space. I mean, Jay Electronica dropped two albums. Two! I mean, they're largely overlapping. But I was like, he dropped two albums because I think even he saw, like, people are going to sit with this and listen to it and kind of really, like, listen. I think people are listening to music more so than I just want this to be the backdrop to a good night. And I think that's kind of why it's perfect for his album to come out now.
Agree 100%. I think that's a spot-on analysis right there, man. I think you hit the nail on the head, for sure.
So we'll see what else comes
so
out.
As
Drake's been real quiet.
As I was, yeah, yeah.
Where the Drake tracks?
But
I'm serious.
Other thing
I'm like,
too.
Drake don't have a single out? None?
Yeah, but that was the other thing, too, with the Kendrick song. I was like, all right, because I saw it. I was like, oh, he got a song with Kendrick? We ain't heard Kendrick all year.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I can't wait to. I'm going to play it through, though. I'm not going to skip forward. And then when I got there, and again, it was just like the beat was just too – it was just too whimsical.
Like, MJ Slander. I won't stand
bang.
For it. This is Jackson 5 Slander.
Bang.
How dare you? Move on to the next one.
We'll move on to the next one. So thinking about this, right, it got me thinking about Busta albums. And we're about to have a conversation about 96 when he first dropped with The Coming. Now, you sent me, I don't know if it was a tweet or a meme or whatever it was, where somebody put Reasonable Doubt into perspective and kind of talked about the kind of retrofitting of Reasonable Doubt as this, like, undeniable classic. And the person whoever put it out there was just like, yo, in 96, this was like, coming off the bench music, you know what I'm saying? This wasn't even like in the starting five. And
shit, stressful, bruh, on Twitter states, I maintain Reasonable Doubt was the sixth man of rap albums that year. The shit we'd bump if we ain't have our starting five in the CD wallet. And only through history rewriting outlandish RCMH, I don't even know what that is, 10-year anniversary concert type stunts, do y'all rate it now more than you did in the moment?
Yeah, and so you sent me that, I digested it, and then I was like,
yeah.
I don't think that's necessarily wrong. And so what I want us to both do is, like, not thinking kind of 2020 you,
yeah,
but 1996 you, where was Reasonable Doubt? Like, where was it at as far as your ranking of your rotation? Where was Reasonable Doubt in your rotation? So I kind of sat down with this and, like, laid it out. And first and foremost, 96 was 96 such an amazing year.
96 is
such an amazing
bananas.
Year.
If you have it recently, just go back and look to see what dropped in 1996. It's like when they do the 96 draft, and you're like, all those people came out in 96? You're like, yes.
Absolutely. Like, I made my top 10, my 10 man rotation. I got that.
Yeah.
And then my honorable mention, I was another 10 deep.
Easy.
And when
Easily.
You hear him, you're going to be like, yeah, that was really good. Yep, that was really good. Yep, that was really good. Yep. And it was like all that came out in 1 year. And the diversity, like, the diversity is just wild.
Yep.
Like, you got some of everything, and it was all quality. It was all
classics.
I was amazed. I was amazed.
All right, so you're gonna go first. Yeah,
I can go first unless you want. I can go first for
no,
sure.
You go first.
So
you go first.
I'll start from the back and work my way up. So for me, at 10, Helter Skelter Nocturnal, and again, this is not me 2020 me. This is.
Yep.
16. In 1996, I'm 16. I'm a sophomore in high school. Helter Skelter, Ruck and Rock, then was my dudes. This album was one of my favorite albums. I still listen to it every now and again I'll pull it out. Love this album, but I got it at 10 in 96. And this album got heavy run for me.
Yeah.
At 9, De La Soul, Stakes Is High. Again, another one that even now I will put this on when I get the feeling.
Yep.
8, Ghostface Killer Iron Man.
Mm.
At 8. At 8, I got Ghostface Killer Iron Man. At 7, I got The Roots, Illadel for Life. Mm-hmm. What?
Yeah.
So these next two are like, for real, this is me, and this is also understanding I'm a kid in the Midwest at this point. So UGK, Riding Dirty.
Oh, yep.
At 6, and Crucial Conflict, The Final Tick. This is my Chicago roots. So I know that's the one that's probably not on nobody's radar, but
rolling on, hey. Yeah, okay.
Hey, 3 hours and out from Chicago, you had to be, boy, this is a Midwest classic. All right,
yeah.
Crucial Conflict, The Final Tick, Midwest class. You can't tell nobody around here about nothing about no Crucial Conflict. All right. So this is where we finally get to Reasonable Doubt. I got it at 4.
Okay.
I got it at 4. And again, I was a Jay-Z fan early. So, like,
yeah.
I remember my best friend from high school, who is now the DJ for Run the Jewels, I had to sit him down. We sat in the East Town Mall parking lot in Madison, Wisconsin. I sat him down and I made him listen to Reasonable Doubt because he was not feeling Jay. And I was like, bro, no, you finna sit down and you finna listen to this. and to this day, he would be like, man, I remember that time you made me listen to Jay. I thank you for that. Because we had the whole underground thing going and Jay-Z wasn't that, you know what I mean?
Nope.
But I was like, this cat can rap. This cat is doing his thing. So Jay-Z, Reasonable Doubt is at 4. The Fugees, The Score is at 3. Mm-hmm. Tupac, All Eyes on Me is at 2. And then Outkast, ATLiens, you knew that was going to be my number one. I listened to that before we started. I put that on before we started the podcast.
Yeah. That's just your Thursday Get Loose music. Got it.
Yeah. For me, that's my set. That's Outkast's second best album right there, with the Equipment I'll be at first. In my honorable mention, Busta Rhymes Are Coming, Jeru the Damager, Wrath of the Math, Redman, Muddy Waters, A Tribe Called Quest, Beats, Rhymes, and Life, Nas, It Was Written, Lil' Kim Hardcore, M.O.P. Firing Squad, Snoop the Dogfather, Raz Castle on Ice, Lost Boys Legal Drug Money. And I probably left some off, man. I ain't put Master P, Ice Cream Man. I could have went with that, man. This year was loaded. Your turn.
Oh, man. So, as far as the ranking, I could think of the 5, but after that, it's just a muddled mess. So you did a good job of doing the 10. I'll see if I can do that now. I will start off with saying, recognizing, and let's see, 96, I was in my first year of college. So I was, Brooklyn kid, up listening, grew up on hip-hop. Now I'm upstate New York, but it's with a bunch of New York dudes, and all we do is listen to music. That's all we do. So Jay was like, we're all waiting on what this is going to be like. That being said, it was not something that a lot of people were – it didn't have the widespread kind of love, even in New York. And, the reason I sent you that thing is because I was like, I hear what he's saying. I don't think this is a hot take. And the reason I don't think it's a hot take is because even Jay-Z himself admits, like, I was not killing the game when I came in, right? Like, people were like, oh, Reasonable, that's good. But it wasn't as if it stopped everything. But they didn't realize that, like, oh, when I look back on it, that there were a lot of, like, the breadcrumbs of who this guy was going to be and how different he actually was to everyone else. It was hard to tell unless you were really listening to it. So Reasonable Doubt for me is actually, and I really thought hard about this. It's hard. I didn't want to, like, say, like, man, did I like this? Reasonable Doubt was number one for me in 96. And that was because I had been listening to it since 95. So by the time it came out, I had all the tracks that were going to be on it from listening to Stretch Armstrong and listening to Pirate Radio. So, like, there were only, like, 3 or 4 songs that I heard. And so for us, it was about, like, what haven't we heard that was on the album? And the ones that I hadn't heard, I remember, were, like, 22-2. Like, the songs that I hadn't heard were incredible. Well, just, like, blew my mind. I was like, oh, my God, I thought he was amazing, and now I think he's more. So I'm going to save the suspense. Reasonable Doubt's number one. Number two was The Fugees. The Fugees was also an album that just I couldn't stop. I just was blown away by. And, again, I knew them and their first stuff, but I was like, this kind of dominated everything in 96 for me. Number three I had as Ghost. Number four was Illmatic. I mean, It Was Written. And I didn't love It Was Written, but it was Nas. And it was like, you have to listen to this. And I remember at one point trying to, like, get the tape from somebody in my dorm because I couldn't get to Sam Goody or whatever at the mall. So I was like, yo, let me hold your Nas tape. And he was like, nah. I was like, come on. I was like, I want to borrow it so I could dub it. And he was like, nah. And I had to wait, like, 2 days until he let me borrow it. I was like, yo, I had to, like, put up collateral. I think I had to give him, like, I can't remember what album I had to give him to get it, but he was like, yeah, all right, I'm going to hold on to this until you bring this back to me. I was like, what? So, yeah. So
be like that.
There. Yeah. And then Lost Boys was huge. Now, again, the Lost Boys, by the time the album came out, all those tracks had been out for a long time.
Yes.
Right? Like, so Lost Boys kind of got jammed. But it was like 10 songs that we had been listening to and dancing to. We had dances to. I mean, like, Lost Boys, Legal Drug Money was just everywhere. You
yes,
played
it was.
So that, at that point, that was high up for me. All right. After that, Redman, Muddy Waters. I love Huge Redman. Mobb Deep, Hell on Earth. And then Roots, Illadelph Half-Life. That's probably – oh, and, oh, man, De La Soul Stakes is high. So this is tough, right, because different months, and I looked at when they got released, and I was like, man, I probably listened to this. But Stakes is High is in the top 10 also. Stakes is High is my favorite De La Soul album by, like, a long, long stretch. I thought that's an opus to me. That's a song – that's a track you can put on and be like, this is how you make an album, son. So that's the 10. And then after that, so, again, Pac, very, contentious relationship with Tupac. Like, I like his music, but he was beefing with Biggie, and I was like, so that automatically
with
puts you on
the
shit
the
list? Yeah, I mean, I was like, I'm sorry. People were like, yo, you gotta listen. I was like, nah, I'm good. But he put out two albums. So me and my girlfriend, I remember that summer being like, man, this album's crazy. And so that one is that's in the bonus. Lil' Kim Hardcore, that really should be top 10, but I was almost like, was it? I can't remember. And really, that was off the strength of Biggie, so I dropped that one down. But that's obviously got like 7 songs that right now I would lose my shit to if someone played at live volume. And Tribe, The Beats, Rhymes, and Life. Listen to that a ton. So that, like, the bonus ones, Akineli, that's another one. That's probably a New York
Century
one. But Akineli came out that year. Put It In Your Mouth was probably the song of the year.
Of course it was. Why would it not be?
The rest of the album actually wasn't bad, but that song was a meteor that just destroyed everything in its path. So I had to put that one on there. And then other ones that you mentioned. And then The Coming, the Busta Rhymes, The Coming. And Busta Rhymes came and performed in Albany that year. And I think at that point, that was the best concert I ever attended in person. It was because he did like Leaders and New Stuff. And then, you know, The Coming album itself had Wu-Ha. I mean, Wu-Ha was like, you can do that? You can you can just rap one.
You can do that.
You can do that? that's incredible. So The Coming was a game changer. And to think that was, you know, 24 years ago, and Busta's still kind of doing similar things now. But, yeah, so –
still surprising.
I had Reasonable Doubt one. I had Reasonable Doubt one, but that's because of a verse. If even if I was from the Bronx, I would probably not have Reasonable Doubt one. But this was something that, if you were a Brooklyn-based hip hop head, Jay-Z was like your, like that ace in the minor leagues. That, like, you know how good he is, and everyone doesn't really know, and you're like, yo, watch. This is Clayton Kershaw.
Yeah.
Right? Just wait.
Yeah.
And as soon as he has something, we just loved it way more than everybody else loved it. And I admit that, But to, if you weren't like, oh, I'm from Brooklyn, then I'm like, oh yeah, you probably didn't. You listen to ET Aliens way more than you listen to Reasonable Doubt for sure. You know,
oh,
so
easily,
that's not surprising.
Easily,
yeah,
easily, yeah. Man, that year, it was just, just like going back through it, man. I was like, this is just wild.
Yeah,
this is just. I mean, because even the Nas joint, like, it was written like I remember because like me and my brother, who's 2 years younger than me, I'm the oldest. He's 2 years younger than me. We had like plan things out when it came to like who was buying what because we never wanted to double up.
Yeah.
So we would be like, hey, so and so's coming out on Tuesday because back in the day, Tuesday was the day.
It was the day.
So,
that was the drop day.
So and so's coming out on Tuesday. What are you getting? What am I getting? All right, we got a plan. Don't deviate from the plan, because if we
so
both follow the plan, we can get everything.
Yeah.
So like,
this is my roommate.
I have a box.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I have a box. I have a box of cassettes still in my basement with all of these in there. Like, all of these are in there. So I went and looked at it. I was like, yep, I got that one. I got that one. I got that one. And the ones I don't have, I texted my brother. He has.
Yeah. I pulled out my Reasonable Doubt cassette as I was packing stuff up, and I think I posted it to Instagram or something like that, and people were like, yes. And I was like, man.
Yeah.
This was
yeah,
it, bro.
Yeah, man. Yeah. My guy, he would be like, dude, you need to get CDs. I was like, but I can get two cassettes for the price of one CD.
Yeah.
But they sound better.
It was a hard sell.
I can get two cassettes for the price of one CD.
That's like,
yeah,
what
it was about,
about.
Yeah, man.
And that was back in the day where I would listen. You'd listen to everything. I mean, the idea of like,
what
I'm just going to skip around. I was like, oh, no.
Yeah. And when you even thinking about that whole concept of listening to everything, when you talk about the diversity of what came out, like, you got like Akinel coming out with in the same year Master P dropping, UGK riding dirty, The Roots, Ghostface. I mean, you got like every region of the country dropping high level stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, like, with like, there's, I don't think there's been a year like this, man. Like, there's like 25 albums.
Yeah.
That came out in 96 that are like if we had a year right now where 25 really, really good albums came out,
people would lose
their
mind. I
would lose my mind.
I would definitely lose my mind. We'd almost be like, it would be unthinkable. And I don't know what explains that. I mean, a lot of people put 94 up there, and 94 has had a lot. But I think 96, just for depth, I can't think of another year that comes close. I'm with you.
I cannot, man. It was just, yeah, man. 96 gonna be that year.
And Pac had two albums out this year. That's
two.
I mean, obviously, yeah. The 7 Day Theory, because they released that after he died, right?
Yes.
If I'm remembering that correctly, so that was a sure money grab. But still,
yep.
It was like Pac, his last thing. Like, oh, okay. Because All Eyes on Me was. That was his, in my view, his best album.
It is absolutely his best album.
Then he dies, and then they put out this other one that's kind of uneven, but it's just like, yo, he's a legend at this point. So everyone just writes. So
yep.
I looked at sales, and he has the number one and number two top first week sales for that year.
Yeah. Yeah, it's wild. And All Eyes on Me was a double disc. Like, that was a double album, so. Yeah, man, it's all crazy, man. That was a crazy, crazy year. Thinking about the vets and the election and what's going on with hip-hop and President Trump, bro. Where are you at on the whole Ice Cube dust-up, the Weezy dust-up, the 50 dust-up? How are you feeling? How are you breaking this all down? Because these are, at least with Ice Cube, like, Cube is like, he's a militant, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
As far as
yeah.
an artist goes. And so to see him kind of engage, it threw a lot of people off, particularly fans, but people in the general public who just have a distaste for, you know, 45.
Mm-hmm.
What has been your impression of this whole kind of little phenomenon that we're in right now?
Yeah, the Cube one, man, I did everything I could to try to understand his side of you. I did so much mental calisthenics to try to be like, no, I see what Cube, you know, because Cube is my dude, right? Like, my 80s and 90s, my whole, like, the first albums that I was buying, those were, like, NWA and Ice Cube albums, right? So, like, that's my guy. I can't explain other than he has become, he's just out of touch. He just out of touch. And this might be the case with all of them. Like, they kind of mean well. Like, him and Kanye are kind of like, I'm passionate, but sometimes because I'm misinformed, I just run amok, and I can be talked into doing some really stupid things, like running for president. And so Cube just, if in a year, I think he's going to look back and be like, I literally became a parody of what I rapped about in Be True to the Game. I literally became that dude who was like, I'm hanging out with Republicans trying to get my view or what I want passed with people who are, like, despised by everyone in my community. Nobody in the hood is like, word, Donald Trump, word, you know, let's get with him. This is just Cube run amok. So I tried to give him a pass. I'm blaming it on he didn't know he was being used as a pawn, and he's not sophisticated, and that's it. That was as far as I could stretch my brain. But then, you know, Wayne and 50, it's like, are we sure? I mean, 50's a troll, so I just leave him out. But Wayne, what do you understand anything that he does?
Nah.
So, you know, nah. I was like, I'm kind of surprised, but at the same time, I'm like, he was high and somebody was like, yo, let's go talk to Donald Trump. He's like, word, word. And then he just showed up there. And that's probably how it happened. I don't think it was like, let's get on the schedule in a month and meet with Donald. I'm betting it was a, yo, we right here, let's just talk. Okay, great. Oh, camera's here. Take a picture with your cardigan sweater that you're wearing for some reason. And then keep it moving. I was like, all right. So, you know, these cats are rich, and they probably, and they're celebrities, and so they probably have more friends and similar contacts with Trump than they do with other folks. And so, you know, they might have a guy that's their manager. They might have a guy that helps, you know, their weed guy that's also good friends with Don Jr. And, you know, all of a sudden you find yourself in a room with Trump. And you're like, oh, shit, how did I get here, right? So some of it I think is just a celebrity network that some of these guys end up getting an audience with Trump that they wouldn't otherwise. But that's the best I can make sense of it. What do you think?
So I want to go. I'll throw on my sociology hat real quick. So there's a couple of things. I think they're rich, right? So that's the first thing. Like, they're rich. So I think there's a common vein there and a level of access that they can get. In Ice Cube's case, 50 was just trolling, and also a little bit in Wayne's case. Similar, but not as much as I think in Cube's case. Cube, to me, is like the real case study of a phenomenon that I kind of see playing out right now. Mm-hmm. Right? So you got the Black Lives Matter movement, which is led by black women, black queer women, right? And a lot of the resistance in the movement right now, black women and black queer women and queer folk are at the forefront. And I feel like black men right now are struggling to find themselves in the movement. And with that, has this rhetoric around the Democratic Party has evolved with the idea that, like, they ain't done nothing for us, which is, there's a lot of truth to that. And I don't consider myself a Democrat or a Republican, but there's a lot of truth to that. At the same time, I think in the idea that, like, I'm so woke that, like, I can see through the Democrats. And I'm so woke. I'm so on another level.
Super woke. Uh-huh.
Since they not going to mess with us, and they haven't been messing with us, I'm going to go talk to the other team and see what's up. Because I am that rebellious. You feel me? So, like, nah, I'm not with the group think. I'm a free think of black man. You hear a lot of folks saying that, and that's always the dog whistle to me.
All
right, you want to know.
Thus, if I do something dumb, it's not dumb. It's just unorthodoxed.
Right. And so I feel like that's what Cube was on. It's he outsmarted himself in the optics of the situation, and it was one of those like, it's like he double spoke himself into a situation where it was like, I'm gonna go meet with him, and I'm gonna convince him to give $1 trillion to the hood, cause he gonna do that. Like, why do you think this man is trustworthy?
That's where I pulled a muscle trying to stretch my brain. He's like, yeah, I'm gonna do this. I was like, okay. Let's say you were like, hey, I got a plan. Is it really called the Platinum Plan?
Is that what
Cube calls it? No, he calls it contract with something.
Trump
something.
Calls
he
it
has
Platinum
another name
plan.
For it, right? Okay.
Trump calls it the Platinum Plan.
Okay. I just want to be sure. So he's like, I got this thing. I think it's important. You know, Kuji Jackalia, all that. We gonna do this thing.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So he has the plan, and he's like, I think, you know, this will work. Oh, okay. Who do you think will stand by their word and actually follow through? And if that answer is Donald Trump, he's the dude that's going to follow through, then that's where you're. I'm like, I don't know why you would think that. And, you know, he defended himself. Like, I brought it to two people. One said, let's talk afterwards. The other said, let's talk right now. I like that. I want to talk right now. I was like, okay. Did they take any action? Is there a check being cut to somebody right now? Anything? No. So they're both giving you lip service. So that's why I was like, if they're both giving you lip service, why would you let yourself be used as a pawn? And that's the part where I'm just like, okay, he has bad counsel. He does. He has a bunch of yes men around him because somebody should have been like, hey,
that is the other piece of this, right? So that's the other layer is that so you try to outsmart the room, and you outsmarted yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Two, like, who in your like, do you could you have had a better proxy, right? Like, could you have leveraged your access to get some the people we need in that room, in the room? You know what I mean? Like,
because
you overestimated your own ability. You don't have the leverage to or the knowledge to speak for the black community, bro. You just don't.
Who are you representing?
Like,
that was the other thing. I was like, contract with Black America. I was like, did Black America get to read this contract before you
Right.
gave it to the leader of the free world? I was like, who elected you?
Right, you got it easy about signing contracts.
Like, what are you talking about? Like, you skipped 8 steps. And so this goes, and this probably is why it rubs me the wrong way, is it's like, it's based on ego. It's based on this idea of, like, I and I alone am going to be able to bring to the black community what others couldn't. And it's a true belief in that. And that is, ironically, or unironically, exactly, that's Trump's whole thing. That's literally Trump's campaign speech. It's like, I and I alone can make America great again. And here's where I think, like, he connects with some of these folks who are also these believers of, like, no, it's me. I am the special one that can do what others can't do. I don't need to sit in meetings and gather. I don't need to do all the hard work. I can skip 8 steps and go straight to the meeting and make it happen. And it doesn't work that way. I'm just shocked that he's gotten as far as he's gotten in everything. He's super successful, done all this other stuff, and he doesn't understand how this thing works. It's crazy. I just can't wrap my head around it. Maybe it's COVID.
Right. Yeah, I couldn't understand it. I get what he was trying to do, and because I get what he was trying to do, I could see the flaw in it, right? Like, I understand what you're trying to do, and that's just not going to work, bro. Like, I totally understand what you wanted to do. I totally understand how you thought that was going to go, and it wasn't going to go that way no matter what, and you were going to be standing there. Again, with this particular person, you were going to be standing there as a photo op for this dude to leverage you, and you going to carry the water. Like, you're going to have to carry the negative, all the negative energy, all the negative whatever that comes from, you're carrying it. He's going to back away and be like, look, I met with a black guy. I sat down to talk with one of the rappers. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like, that's what, and like you got hustled by a hustler. You know what I mean? It's one of those situations. And, like, you've been away from the streets too long when you can't recognize that dude's a hustler. And there was no way you were coming out of that situation with an upper hand of any kind with that dude.
Yeah.
Right? So that's, like, yeah, I just feel like brothers are out there trying to figure out how they can contribute. And patriarchy and ego, man, that's a wild cocktail.
That's that point you made, though. I have to think on that because that I hadn't thought of that angle before. But I'm in a couple of chats, you know, talking about everything that's happening. It's like, you know, Stacey Abrams, we might owe her for this. You know, all these, you know, black women that pretty much laid the groundwork to make this thing happen. And for me, it's like, man, this is we're lucky, we're blessed. And
yes.
some folks are like, well, where's my role in this then?
Yes.
You know, if these are the
Absolutely.
Leaders and these are the representatives, and that can be a struggle for some guys.
That's not the
man.
Paradigm we were taught, right? That's not the paradigm we were taught. Malcolm
yeah.
Martin, and
yeah.
you know, a dude is supposed to be at the front, and that's what we were sold. But that's not even the reality in those contexts, right? Even back then, that wasn't necessarily the reality of what was going on. The sisters always have been in it and at the front. And, you know, again, folks in power pick and choose who they want to prop up as leadership. And so, like, now that it's not, you can't hide it. We just trying to figure that out, man. I mean, we just trying to figure that out. And so some cats are doing that out loud and some of that cats are doing that in public. And it's going to be some falling on their faces, man. It's going to be some falling on the faces, so.
All right, I'm going to have to start looking out for this dynamic. I'm going to have to start looking out for this in different circles.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to test your sociological theory.
All right, we'll test it out, get it out in the field. We trust science. You know, we trust math, too. they can go ahead and wrap this up, Joe. Like,
yeah.
Georgia, let's get it done. I don't
Are
know
we
what.
There? Are you, you got the TV on in the back. Has anything happened?
Georgia's like a tie. Pennsylvania is getting there. Trump is literally up by like 27,000 votes. 26. He's ahead 26. Nevada is still being Nevada. Arizona tripping. Like, why can't they just do what California did? Like, California, the polls closed, and like 30 seconds later, it was like, we're calling California. And I was like, why can't everybody do that? Cali is big as hell.
Yeah.
Well, like, how they get all they votes in that fast?
It's, yeah. All I'll say is, having read and followed way too much of this, I realized, like, oh, there's a lot of arcane state-level stuff that just
Bruh.
Makes it ridiculous. And I'm like, okay,
Bruh.
All right. Why do you have it this way? You know what? Don't even
why
answer
is,
that. I
why
don't
is,
care.
Why are the votes being delivered by a man on a horse? Well, that's the way we did it. We've always
yeah.
done it that way. Yeah, we got cars now. You ain't got to do it that way no more. But it's written in the state constitution. Yeah, y'all should update that.
Yeah, just like they updated Rhode Island is now Rhode Island. It is no longer a plantation. So, there we go. 2020. What a year.
Oh, man, 2020. I'm telling you. And I don't think 2020 is done with November yet. I think 2020 is going. I think this might be the grand finale for 2020.
Yeah, the season finale of this episode of My Life is a hell of a doozy. It's going to be worse than Ozark season 2.
Yeah, funniest meme I've seen about 2020 in a minute. It was a wide shot view of the planet Earth from outer space, and an alien sitting there with a remote saying, "This season of Earth is wild."
I think they've jumped the shark. I think the writers are just gone a little overboard. If you watched a movie where all this stuff happened, you'd be like, man, these writers are tripping. They must have been on some drugs because this is just
like,
too much.
They trying to throw everything into one movie.
Yeah.
You can't do that.
You got to pace it out.
They got a
it
racial uprising, a pandemic, a crazy president. All these famous people are dying. Come on,
just not
man.
Believable. Just not believable.
This all
would sorry.
This would never happen like this in real life. All right, man. We're going to get out of here. Great show, as usual. I'm going to try to get some bells and whistles on this thing for the next time. Till then, we'll see you. They we'll have got a any
president. By the next time we talk, we'll have a president. So
we better.
Or an extinction level event, maybe. One of the two.
We'll have a president, or we'll be in a civil war.
Bet. All right.
All right, homie. Peace.
Later.
Yep.